The talk today is called Dharma Eggs. And since we're not talking from one of the texts of any of these guys, so it's just us, we can be more relaxed. If you have any trouble hearing, please come closer. Feel free to move so that you can hear. Dharma eggs. Eggs. Like scrambled eggs, but not scrambled. Dharma. 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 We'll be talking. What is this word? Dharma, like open dharma. The name of our retreat. You can sit next to me. Even here, you can.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we can have a real talk. Yes. We're spoiled with so much space. In many retreats, we have to go first and measure with the size of one yoga mat times the number of people coming, so that you know this is your space and not 1 inch to the left. Here we should just fence off. Don't go that far. So starting with the first word in the talk, we have the first question. What is dharma? So when I gave the name Open Dharma to us, to what was happening, there weren't so many groups with this name in it, but I was already in love with the word. Now Evan was saying he was going online just to see how many names of how many groups and places have the word dharma in it, and like in the Google, how many pages, dharma this, dharma that. But still we have the question, what is it? So just to start with, many people say that the simple translation is that it means support. Dharma means support. And it's interesting when we think of, what is support? What does that mean? So I have the support of my cushion. Me and the cushions have the support of the mattress and the table, and we have the support of the floor, and we have the support of the earth. All of that is nice, but it still gives the feeling support as something kind of dead. It will lie still for me, then I can be living on top of that. But dharma as support is something, it's a living support. It's not just lying there dead or broken so that I can move. And I think that just the fact that we can call dharma support and then question what is support shows us in our minds that we have a confusion about what is supportive. We don't know what is supportive. And even the earth, if we think about it, it lies still for us, but it's actually not lying still. It's one of the fastest things that in our experience. And so alive, and it's a support that it's not only the physical weight bearing, it's our life support as well. And even though we try to be more green and more eco, there's still this kind of crack in our thinking many times, and therefore in what we allow ourselves to know in our experience. A crack about what is supportive. and whether something can be supportive and be dead at the same time or not. But if what supports me is living, is it predictable? I want my support to be predictable according to my time frame. And what is living is not predictable. It has a rhythm. There's usually in certain countries, spring, summer, fall, winter. Here we have different seasons, but it's usually hot season, monsoon, etc. Sometimes monsoon doesn't come. Is that supportive, not supportive? It's living. So then it changes our experiencing of ourselves when we start to accept that what's really supportive is really alive and right comes right inside us. It can't be separate from us and support. It can't be finally separate. So there are a few lines from Krishnamurti, who is one of the many kind of like shining stars from this country who have tried to give us some words to go on. See if I can read here. Why I choose these words is it feels like my feeling. He said in 1933 in Italy, friends. So first of all, friends. If these guys want to come, then they come as friends. Welcome. Thank you. I should like you to make a living discovery, not a discovery induced by the description of others. I like this word induced. I know it's not an easy English word. So he's saying, I would like you to make a living discovery, not a discovery induced by a description of others' experience. Induced, sometimes we might say we induce labor in a pregnant woman. We give her something that will make the labor happen, will make the baby come out. We give some kind of drug to induce a state. And it does so happen, I find, that we hear a description from someone else and it sounds interesting, exciting, glamorous. Even we feel some kind of resonating in us. But it doesn't just stop with that. It's not just that that would get us going in our own discovering. It seems to easily put us on a track where we unconsciously recreate what we do with their description. It induces an experience. It's not an actual discovery. So it's like a drug-induced hypnosis that we do, or somehow that happens in us. And so he says, I should like you to make a living discovery, not a discovery induced by the description of others. If someone, for instance, had told you about the scenery here, you would come with your minds prepared by that description, and then perhaps you would be disappointed by the reality. No one can describe reality. You must experience it, see it, feel the whole atmosphere of it. So that's what we're here for, is to, first of all, try to uncover the discoverer, the possibility of discovering in us, which takes a lot of confidence that we often don't have. It takes confidence to feel that there could be discovery. It takes the kind of confidence that's really courage, where I feel, and I am in a way, stepping on ground that no human being has ever stepped on. It's not according to what I read. And we usually get shaky there. We want to go with the herd. the group, I mean, the herd, like the herd, but the herd of sheep, whatever, what we heard. And but we also have this kind of wave that's cresting in a human being that we can see also physically around us as inspiration. We can see in the way that life takes all of these forms and has taken all of these forms, and that apparently, according to the science story, we were the one cell, and then we were the multi-cell, and then we started to be fish and crocodiles and snakes, so we had no arms. And that was somehow enough in itself, and also something didn't stop. Something was into discovering what is it to grow arms and legs? What is it to just look up? And what is it to come a little farther up? Sorry, it would be like this. And what is it to come a little further up? And you can explore those postures and feel it's a different consciousness with the chin out, the pelvis back, but up, as opposed to all fours, as opposed to the belly. And then up. And then what next? Part of why someone else's description induces what we've heard induces us into non-discovery. Is this confusion about what's supportive. So when we hear that standing up comes later and is therefore better and more advanced than going on all fours or being on the belly, we want to like throw away the belly and the all fours and the fish and the no arms. But without all of those steps, we never actually manage to stand up. And from standing up, we can discover what's next. But we can't stand up without all of the lying down, crawling, swimming, simply just skin, cell, etc. And so when we start to have more respect for what's supportive and how alive it is, then we are in discovery. We're in living discovery. What's funny that happens, it keeps coming to my mind here, is we sometimes fall into discovery and we feel fully enamored of all of those, the one cell, the many cell, the swimming, the coming onto the land, the standing. We don't hate that and want to get away from it. We so love it that we let it well up and come into discovery of what naturally, spontaneously expresses next. We don't stick to the ground, but we don't try to get away from the ground. And naturally something spills forth. And when we start to let that spilling forth come upon us a few times, then I imagine the image is like a bird who maybe has heard about flying and maybe even knows about flying. Heard about flying, knows about flying. But this discovering, the living discovery, is such a different kind of process. So I'm trying to speak about our experiential discovery. And so then the bird starts to have an egg inside. Starts to feel something's going on. Something's really going on. I really feel different. I feel heavy. I thought we were supposed to be light. We're going to fly. We don't trust our experience. We don't even accept what our experience is, because we couldn't be getting heavy if we're going to fly. If we want to have mastery of flight, it can't be about heavy. I've heard that flying is about going up. So we have this kind of superstitious mindset sometimes. And then we feel like something's really going on, and I'm either going to die, or there's an earthquake, or I don't know what. And then something really happens, and the egg comes out. And I just imagine a bird looking at an egg. The bird being nice and fluffy with feathers and little feet, eyes, sharp beak. And then there's this totally bizarre thing that has happened. Completely unbird-like, completely unflight-like. And if we kind of peck at it, like in the way that we try to discover when we're trying to make it match the book, we know what happens if we peck at the egg from the outside too many times or too soon. We have to let another pecking come from inside, and it takes so much longer than we want. And we're supposed to just sit there and keep the egg warm? We wanted to do like intensive meditation. I want to fly, you know, what is this nest thing? And this weird globule that has no feathers, no feet, no eyes, what is this? So I want to talk about two kinds of confusion and two kinds of suffering in this transformation, in this living discovery. So that's one kind of confusion is when I expected to be in the air and what I actually experience is heavy and then weird and then having to stay still when I wanted to be uncontained. This is good confusion. This is brilliant confusion. This is when someone comes to an interview and says, I'm so confused, I just found this egg. Which might be like, my mind is so busy. And we don't realize that it's an insight, that I've just actually noticed my experience instead of being induced into some hypnosis. That once we let ourselves have someone else's description induce a kind of experience. It's a kind of trip that we go on. It's really like taking a drug and it has a certain time period that it lasts. Okay. So it's really important to notice when we're starting to take that drug. And to try to just be willing, to remember to find our willingness to be with our real experience and to feel the livingness in the real experience. And to pay attention to how it's different from the description. Not to assume the description is better. When we heard the description, we felt uplifted or inspired or yummy or whatever. Or like, basically, I could be special. I could be that special. And when we feel our real experience, it's so ordinary. And often, sometimes uncomfortable. Often somewhat uncomfortable. So there's the confusion of where someone else's description has induced my hurting nature. That's confusion. I'm not anywhere listening to my own life. And then the living confusion is when we find out that the map we were carrying absolutely does not apply, or does not apply in the way we wanted. The way it might apply is once we let the egg be warm long enough and by itself crack open, and then some juicy, weird thing comes out of the egg. Oh my God, it's getting worse. Wasn't it supposed to be beautiful and peaceful and silent? And flight, not wet. we let it go on and on, because suddenly we realize no one else is going to take care of this little thing. I'm stuck. And again, we think stuck is wrong. We're not supposed to be stuck. We're supposed to let go. I must be attached. And we could get, again, induced into another hypnosis. Oh, I must be attached. That kind of confusion. And then we come back to, eventually life is like still going on, and here we are. There's still an egg. Sit on it. Lie down on it. Some other kind of instinct sometimes gets the better of us, that kind of spiritual instinct. And so we feel wrong. We feel that we're wrong for being stuck and attached and all of that interpretation. And meanwhile, something in us, if we're lucky, keeps staying in the nest on the egg, imagining what flying is like. So there's the many different kinds of suffering that happen when what we've heard drives us to follow it off of our living path. There's the initial, that primordial kind of disconnection from our own information, our own living feedback. There's the tension from that, therefore, feeling not enough, feeling needy. The tension of trying to get to fulfillment by going faster and faster, feeling ashamed. We misinterpret this primordial disconnection from our living quality. We misinterpret that uneasiness to be what it's all about, what we really are, and we feel ashamed of that. And we try to hurry to catch up to everyone else who seem to know how to meditate, who seem to be so peaceful, etc. If only we knew what were under their nice feathers. Another egg, maybe it's spotted, and that's weird too. Or blue egg, oh my God. And what can kind of draw us through the confusion and the suffering? Is we could talk about two kinds of pleasure. It's not that there are only two kinds of pleasure, but I want to talk about two kinds of pleasure. There is that pleasure of hearing something exciting. Maybe this will save me, this will be the answer. There's that kind of pleasure where we seem to kind of pretend that we're getting what we thought we wanted. So we're told to want this, we try our best, and sometimes we pretend to get it, or sometimes it seems to really come. And for a little while, we feel happy. We feel permission to be happy. We don't notice where the happiness is coming from. We think the happiness is really coming from getting what I thought I wanted. And it's mostly just because of finally relaxing. I have permission now to be happy. I have permission to leave what I thought was my core, not enoughness. And luckily, there is another kind of pleasure. And we all know it. We would not be here alive without it. It usually catches us by surprise in a moment where maybe we fell asleep on the egg kind of thing. We wake up from the nap and it's not so bad just being here and not needing to do anything else. Since I can't anyway, just here lying in the sun. Not sure why, but can't leave this egg Something in me can't betray the egg. I don't know what the egg is. We're kind of in contact with what one of my Tibetan teachers calls the basic goodness. So we let the sun touch us, or even, I would say, love us. It's a moment of that not needing to be special, not needing to take the drug to induce a hypnosis. I want you to know that it's not unusual, it's not weird, that once you start quieting down, slowing down, tuning in, dropping in, feeling, being more in touch with your real experience and less in touch with the map, less in touch, less induced, I like this word. You may have noticed in the first couple of days of the retreat, it's very normal on retreat, the first few days, that you knew you wanted to come into silence, but when you actually do, you can't believe how much noise is in your head. It's a simple example that everyone's felt, so I give that. And then again, the head maybe sometimes is a little quiet and something else seems to be disturbed. It's partly that we're available for it. We're available to feel it. We let ourselves be sensitive. We let the human quality of sensitivity take place. Usually then we misinterpret again what is happening. If we feel something raw, if we feel some turbulence, we assume something's wrong. But again, if we just think of the bird and the egg, and even thinking of getting the egg out of the bird, just as one metaphor, there would be some turbulence there. There would be some unusual sensations. When something that has been in a certain strict form, strictly held because of what we've been told and taught, we've agreed to come into a form that we were told to take, and we let that become solid. When the living quality within that, so it might be the tendency to rage, or to sadness, or to loneliness, or whatever, tendency in the body, the mind, wherever, energy, when the living quality in that, that seemed to be only a certain shape, it seemed to be only possible for that to be that shape, but it's alive, when that starts to change shape, it can be very uncomfortable. So not to interpret discomfort as something wrong. You came on a deep rest retreat thinking, they're going to give me deep rest. They're going to induce deep rest for me. But deep rest is part of discovering. It means uncovering, discovering. And even when light is getting uncovered, it can be so shocking. In a way, it has to be so shocking. On the way to uncovering what we really are, we also uncover some of the things that we didn't want to know about that kind of encouraged us to go get induced. And I want to give this description by Gurdjieff. who was a crazy man. Crazy wise man. Talking about how transformation might look and feel. And he actually, I find it in a kind of a joke, he kind of actually puts it on a scale. And he's, the starting point is negative 6,000. The negative 6,000 consciousness is superstition. And we might think, oh, he's talking about like the tribes or whatever. But we've already seen where we so easily become superstitious. An example, we had a nice meditation. What did I do to get that? How can I induce it again? Instead of staying with the living discovering, we want to induce the experience again. At least to ourselves, fine. But okay, it was sunset, that water sound was there, I had my feet like this, etc. Then we find that it actually doesn't work. And so we jump to negative 3,000, according to Gurdjieff. Negative 3,000 consciousness. Community belief. Group mind. Conventional thinking, consensus reality. So this herd that something in us feels comfort in. Something in us can't stand. And then we jump to negative 1500, king ego, queen ego, being so unique. I no longer have to obey the dictates of the group. I'm not going to follow along with the herd. So we've achieved specialness for a while. We're in a kind of bubble where we feel we've achieved specialness. And so for a while that the neediness, the sense of not enough that got us running and searching instead of discovering, for a while has a game, a strategy, a way to play specialness by being different in any way whatsoever. Negative 768 consciousness. Theoretical mastery, and this was partly what was in the class yesterday, or yesterday about knowing but not living the knowing. In the language of Krishnamurti, the language of today, we induce, so that the initiate, the practitioner, the seeker, succumbs to the illusion. So we induce an imagined reality that we've theoretically mastered. Entire cosmologies of how the universe works. So it wasn't enough, after all, just to be special and different. But anyway, now that I've achieved specialness, I might as well occupy myself with getting to know my kingdom. And it's all completely a lie. Unhelpful, let's see. Negative 384. Next stop on the elevator. Depression. So this might be when the egg comes out. We're like, I did all of this work. Here, this is definitely something's going on. I finally know for sure I'm having an experience. It's an egg. I'm depressed. Oh my God. After 20 years of meditating. I realize I'm depressed. We realize our pretension. We realize we don't want to be pretentious. We realize it doesn't matter, like, that people think this ashram is better than this one, or this practice is better in the direct way. It doesn't make us special. It's not like a kind of power over knowledge. It's just, oh my God, I've wasted my life. Now I feel empty. And again, we think feeling empty would be wrong. I've got to feel full. What will fill me? And then we go for another heard. So as we start approaching ground level at -192 consciousness, suicidal panic. Would we think we're improving? I'm laughing, and it is also, I think it's partly a tongue-in-cheek description, but it's also good to know that this does happen. There can be, it doesn't have to be, but there are often moments or a stage of suicidal panic, and it's not a bad sign. Don't act on it. Don't let your interpretation of it induce another hypnosis. Close to breakthrough. Suicidal panic, close to breakthrough. That would normally be when we would give up, when we would lose confidence in the possibility that there's any living discovery going on. We would say, any sane person would say, preoccupation, I would be prescribed also. Preoccupation with death does not equal living discovery. We know in the small ways when that feeling of, I want to get out of here, takes over and like shakes ourselves. We know a taste of this. And some of us may have actually visited that floor on the elevator. We can't believe that we could possibly be going up. And something happens that we realize it's not about what I believe. And that's important. It would normally be when the egg is getting ready to start cracking from the inside. And that is normally when we would give up. So I think it's of real importance to know that in outer situations as well as the most inner. The last negative 96 consciousness, we're still completely in the dark. We haven't even gotten this up to the coal mines kind of thing. Complete remorse. So that means the realization of having stingily, so having been having not allowed the living discovery to be generous to us. In the complicated English, the realization of having stingily refused the generous offering of the universe to play. It feels like, okay, well, I didn't kill myself, but I've wasted my entire life. And so I want to talk about here just briefly two kinds of sadness. This is an important kind of sadness, to let it have its space. There's sadness that is, we're just induced into repeating some story, any story. Whatever may have happened. There can be a time that we need to realize, yeah, that did happen, and that does happen. And how does that come in without breaking my confidence in the living quality? But then there's when we go to the story for the sadness to get away from all of this nesting. So it's not that the egg has cracked yet. We've just realized that not even suicide would just be another kind of drama, but I did waste my life. So this is not a joke. To be able to have the confidence, and in a sense, we could just use the word strength, to say to oneself, I have blown my life. However many years of practice, of trying our very best, of listening to the best teachings on MP3 and live, whatever. The way I took it in was completely not valid for me, for this life. They might still be the best teachings. The way that it came in and got used was complete illusion, useless. Then the egg breaks, light comes pouring in. We experience things as they are, as a beginning. And it continues to be real discovery, because it's really beyond what the words, what the books can peck to. So we're not, the baby bird isn't flying yet, but it's clear that light has come in and life has clearly shown. There's no doubt. There's no doubt that the living quality is strong enough now to show itself. It's not strong enough to be on its own. So clarity doesn't mean no more of this messy practice. Not that we're looking for that kind of relief at that point, but in case we imagine, oh, maybe I'm about to get to that point where the egg breaks open. There's no looking for relief from this messiness. What's important is to really feel sensitively and vividly, experientially, letting it really come across to our whole being. The difference between suffering and pleasure that is just repetitive, that is destructive, that is actually already dead. It doesn't have any living quality in it. We might feel more alive, stimulated, and we could believe that that's living quality, but somewhere we know, and we can start to really make it clear to ourselves the difference between this living quality that can discover, that is in itself discovery, and what we try to substitute for living quality, to make us feel alive through suffering, through pleasure, through sadness, through confusion. Does that make sense so far? It's important to have it clear, a felt experience of dead and living, and to even take it as a game, so very playfully, almost like, okay, come on, show me fake life so that I can really feel how subtly alive, almost not breathing, is the living quality sometimes coming across to us, and how extremely alive dead can feel. I think it's about openness for this to be kind of taught, our experience to us. It's a kind of private affair. I don't mean from a place of not enough, oh my God, I've got to figure this out. Jaya said it's important to know the difference and go like scurrying off, running off to try to get it. But staying on your egg, staying in your nest with openness to simply know. And so it's not just, oh, I'll just keep doing this practice as long as it takes. I'll just keep going. The living quality is continually in refinement, adjustment. I have a favorite doctor now. She's my doctor in South India. And she would say, okay, for today, this is your medicine, but call me tonight because it will have changed. The dosage, the timing will have changed. Call me tonight and I'll check for you what it should be. Call me in the morning and I'll check, because it's a living thing, a living process. But it's not just, so it's not just like simplicity in the sense of whatever, I'll just sit here, I'll just keep going. There is all that awareness of what we don't know and the honesty of how much there is that we don't know, how much is unknown. That honesty, the sadness of having pretended for so long that what we thought was knowing has nothing to do with knowing, etc. Or that I replaced this idea with a living knowing. An acknowledgement that mostly it's unknown. But that's not then an end. Like, we keep wanting to come to an end so that we could relax. And it's relaxing into the ongoing discovering, rather than waiting for there to be a pause so that I am allowed to relax. Relaxing as a living thing, supported by livingness. Letting ourselves be kind of folded in to the mix. And there is some of what is unknown that we will come to know. And there are some that is just unknown, unknowable. But we feel comfortable in mystery, and we love mystery. One kind of good news is, even if it's important to start to feel what is living quality, because living quality is here and all around, with our sincerity, our sincere wish to be in a living stillness on retreat, we don't have to be very, very careful about what we're empowering in our practice. We can be very receptive about living made adjustments in our practice, but we don't have to be very careful. It's not like walking on eggshells, caring but not careful, because just the fact of being warmly with what's going on in your real experience is all that we can do, being warmly with it. So, like the bird being warmly with the egg. And I have one teacher that I love, this image of also just saying, just sit on the eggs. What is dead will rot. What is living will be nourished and come about, grow, show up, whatever, eventually. And not only is what will dead in us, if it's dead and it's getting warmth, it will rot. If we're just being with living quality as sincerely as we can, warmly with our experience, we don't actually have to know mentally, oh, wait, that was dead, that's life. What's dead will rot, and also will start to be drawn in to what's living, just like we see outside of ourselves. So it's not about trying to be puritanical. It's just allowing ourselves to go through what we could call stages that are necessary. Different kinds of judgment happen, for example. I said on the first night, at first in our lives, what we judge to be good, we usually end up finding later on, is one of the worst things for us. And what we used to think of as terrible is really our home. But it's not going to be home until we feel home there. It's not to force ourselves to be there. Then we start judging. We start to feel, oh, I can be right. And sneaky, by being right, I can have power over you by knowing what's what. And then we come back again to the living quality, and a different kind of judgment starts to happen, where we start to be able to feel what is alive now, what's appropriate, what is... This word sustainable is around now, but not just sustainable. And we talked about supportive in the beginning. So what is living support? What is life enhancing? What is sneaky in a different way? Sneaky without an agenda, kind of fermenting. We can feel what is helpful, not according to my plan of where I thought I should go. And as we're more and more in that living quality, we find ourselves being more easily responsive, less reactive. And sometimes we notice later that some kind of direct insider action happens through a human being. It's not instinctual, it's not reactive. It's actually even that much quicker than the conditioned reaction and the biological instinct. Quicker and more direct. But we would notice afterwards what we just did and think, we could easily think, oh my God, that's not allowed. That's not right. That's not supportive. In one set of teachings, they talk about judgment as a mode of consciousness, we could say, that's near to completion, near to the completion stage, you could say. And they use the word judgment. I find it interesting. It's called judgment. And what the feeling experience is forgiveness. Not just forgiveness that you did that and it's okay, I got over it. I'm stronger than you, kind of thing. I can turn the other cheek or whatever. But forgiveness of it being messy. And this direct act that's kind of like pure creative, direct giving. May or may not look like giving, but a direct, unheld back, living giving. And so we come home again and again to, let's say, like what came before. We come closer and closer to what came before. And we, in Gurdjieff's kind of schema, we come to where we could actually see there's actually light. And we're no longer compelled in the way that we were to be on or to be off, to be active or to be quiet. And so those laws that we're comfortable with and so comfortable with them that we call them laws don't apply. we keep coming closer and closer to what began living quality. And it's so generous. I want to just end with a parts, the beginning and the end of a poem by Rumi, translated by Coleman Barks. This we have now is not imagination. This is not grief or joy, not a judging state, or an elation, or a sadness. Those come and go, this is the presence that does not. What else could human beings want? When the night sky pours by, it's really a crowd of beggars, and they all want some of this. This we are now, created the body, cell by cell, like bees building a honeycomb. The human body and the universe grew from this, not this from the universe and the human body. So enjoying the honey in what comes from this. May all beings be peaceful. May there be peace. May our practice and our lives embody the living quality and contribute to the momentum towards awakening everywhere.